And we've in the past gone through these halachos over the last couple years, and for those that have heard it before, it's Chazara, and just to get a little more clarity, and people still asking the same questions, so I guess that means we could still give the same share over. From year to year, people continue to ask the questions, so we'll just go over some of the halachas, and in regards to getting ready and cleaning, and maybe we'll get to some things when we get a kitchen, kashering the kitchen, etc. So when most people think about cleaning for Pesach, it gets very, people tend to get a little overwhelmed, and where am I going to do this? Where do I start? Where do I end? Is it really going to be possible to do it? And that was always the minhag in Klal Yisrael, people take chametz and the Yisurim of Pesach very seriously, and crumbs and everything. So, and of course that's the minhag, and there was such a minhag like that, and we're not coming to take away from that. However, it's important to understand what really we have to do. If we know what we have to do, and then we know besides what we have to do, we can go do extra and go an extra mile if we have time and it's okay. That's one thing, but we should just understand what is it really the mitzvah all about. So as a matter of fact, sometimes if we try to be too machmer, try to find the extra ways to make chumras and really clean thoroughly and scrape every surface and every part of the house, so people tend to get so overwhelmed that maybe they'd rather not do it at all, so and lose out on what they could possibly do. And it's not always necessarily worth it to do all the extra work when you could have maybe just done the halacha and maybe been more prepared for a Yom Tov and been in a better state of mind. So we're going to go through a little bit the basic halachas and then see what can be done a little bit differently. So there was an article written one time by Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, about what the basic halachas are, and that article is around. And some of what I'm going to say is based on what he writes over there. I myself had a story with him that I was in Eretz Yisrael, and there was and I was coming back for Yom Tov, and I went to Rav Scheinberg to ask him different things, and I asked him about if you have to clean the in pants, in those days. There was cuffs in the pants. It's folded over. It gets very dirty there. So do you have to vacuum out the cuffs of the pants before Pesach? He says, do you have to check there? So he said, check there. Check for what? So I said, there's all sorts of crumbs over there. Nah, there's nothing there. You don't have to check over there. So I said, well, it says you're supposed to look to see if there's chametz in your pockets. He says, pockets? Pockets? Maybe you went to a kiddush. And, something looked good. And you wanted to bring something home for your kids or whatever. So you stuck a cookie in your pockets. A cookie or something. And then you forgot about it. But in a place that there's only crumbs, we're not talking about that. Don't worry about that. So that was what he told me. So I just to understand a little bit what was that story all about. So the halachas is, obviously we know that there's two halachas that comes to Pesach. One is you're not allowed to eat the chametz, and one is you're not allowed to own chametz. It's two separate halachas. Now, that's why we do bedika, and we check the house, and you're not allowed to own chametz. Besides that, you're not allowed to eat the chametz. Now, the Gemara says in Psachim that crumbs are batel. They're totally insignificant, and therefore, if a person owns crumbs on Pesach, there's no prohibition involved in owning crumbs because the crumbs are insignificant. They're batel me'elav. You don't even have to check for the crumbs because they're batel. There's no significance to little tiny pieces of crumbs. So the Gemara says, so what do you have to check for? You have to check for gluska yafa. You have to check for a nice little cookie, something that you may end up eating. But something which is ma'us, which is dirty and has no, it's completely insignificant, has no value, so you don't care about it. And there's no possibility, basically, that you may end up coming to eat it. You don't have to worry and check for that. Rabbi Avraham Gurwitz, who's a reshiva in Manchester, in Gateshead today, he said that when he was a bachar learning in Brisk, by the Brisker Rav, when the Brisker Rav was older, at the end of his life, he didn't do the bedikah himself. He got the bachram to help him do the bedikah. So the bachram got together, and the Brisker Rav said the bracha, and everyone went to different areas of the house to check as a shliach for the Brisker Rav. So Rav Gur, which was standing right next to the Brisker Rav, he was the bracha then, and the Brisker Rav said the bracha, and he said amen, and he right away got on his hands and knees and started checking here like the cracks between the tiles. So the Brisker Rav said to him, "Do you think you're going to find the gluska yafa?" That's what Gemara says. "Do you think you're going to find the cookie in that crack over there?" So don't you don't have to check over there. So in other words, little insignificant crumbs is bottle. There's no value to them. Maybe there's minig yisal kedoshim heim, but the halacha is that they're bottle, and therefore you don't really have to be concerned about tiny inedible crumbs that are mos, that are disgusting and inedible, basically. However, what you do have to check for is something which is edible. Something which is an edible piece of chametz. That there was a takanas chazal, you have to be careful about that, and you have to check for edible pieces of chametz. So even if it's less than a kazayis, which is normally the shear that we say, but an edible piece of chametz, that's something you would have to check for. So an edible piece of chametz means it's an entire piece, like a pretzel or a Cheerio or something which is a larger piece of chametz, that there is a chiv to check for and make sure that those aren't around, an edible piece. But the crumbs and the stuff that's, you know, things like that, you don't have to check for. That's number one. Now, the only thing, so as we'll see, we'll go through the house and we'll talk about different areas, in many areas of the house, the crumbs are really not a chashash that you would have to check for and worry about the crumbs. The only thing is that in places where a crumb may end up falling into your food, that maybe we do have to be concerned about the crumbs, because again, there's a consideration that perhaps you may end up eating that crumb. Maybe it'll fall into your food, maybe you'll end up touching it and eating it. So that's where the crumbs would come in. But in other areas of the house, you won't have to necessarily be worried about crumbs. And all you have to be worried about is bigger pieces of chametz that perhaps are edible. So so for example, if you're checking a bedroom, a kid's bedroom, so you want to see if how do you clean that for Pesach? So there's a possibility that there's chametz in all the drawers, that the kids come in and put chametz in the drawers and everything like that. But really, the ikar halacha we have to do is you have to make sure that there's no edible pieces that you would see. So if, let's say, you open a drawer and you take out the socks and you see, is there chametz or there's no chametz? And if you see there's no chametz, you can put it back to close and go to the next drawer. So, you know, check, see if there's chametz, and you don't have to scrub and scrape and take a, you know, when we were growing up, so we would, you know, take out all the drawers, take, you know, Fantastic or whatever, some cleaner, spray it in each corner, then take a toothpick wrapped by like a paper towel, rub up and down each corner of the four corners of the drawer, and then vacuum out the drawer and, you know, move on to the next one. But really, that's not the halacha. You don't have to do that. You just have to look. You don't have to clean it. You just have to take out this whatever it is. Take out the clothes, look in the drawer, see if there's chametz, and then put it back. And do that with the drawers and under the bed, same thing. Just look, see if there's chametz. And if you have a good sweeping or whatever of the floors, then you probably are fine, and that's it. That's all you have to do. So a bedroom, there's no concern that you may end up eating the crumbs, that even if there would be crumbs, but you're not eating the crumbs because you're not eating from the sock drawer in the bedroom. So there's no concern for the crumbs in that particular in that type of in the room over there. up. Now let's say that's let's say a bedroom in a playroom with toys. So perhaps it would be the similar idea. A playroom with toys. So you want to make sure there's no edible pieces of chametz. But if you're not planning on, you know, playing with it, eating, the, no one's planning on eating the toy, you know, the toys, you stay in the playroom. So you just have to make sure that there's no big edible pieces of chametz. So you take a drawer, a cabinet from the, a bin of toys, and you look at it, take out the toys, see if there's chametz in there, and put it back. And anything which is stuck to the toys and all that, that you don't have to be concerned about. So you just have to look for the chametz and see if there's any chametz, and if not, you can put it back. Now, the only thing is, you have to be careful that those toys, if there is a concern that there's actually chametz stuck to the toy or something like that, that you don't bring that type of toy to the table. Because if you bring it and play with that at the table that you're going to eat at, so then there's a concern that maybe the crumbs will fall onto the table or be with the food. And that's something you should be concerned about. But a regular toy, let's say that will stay in the, if you can be sure that the toys will stay in the playroom and will stay. The main thing is for you that you have to make sure that it doesn't come to anywhere that you're going to be in contact with the food. That's more the concern. You're not giving the chametz to the baby.
You give the toy that has chametz.
If you know that it has it somewhere, but you're just saying you have to check for it. That's the point. Are you concerned? Is the chashash that maybe it's on there? So that much, that concern, you don't have to be concerned about. What's the chashash that maybe there is, and maybe if there is, the child's eating it on his own. It's not your, you know, you're not feeding it to the baby. You're not allowed to feed chametz to a child, but this is not called feeding it. Okay, so areas that have nothing to do with eating, nothing to do with the kitchen, nothing to do with the dining room, it's only places where there's chametz around. So over there, you don't have to worry about crumbs. You just have to worry and check for the edible piece of chametz. You have to see if there's a Cheerio or a pretzel-sized piece so you can see with your eyes. So you don't have to, be worried beyond that. So that's the first step, and that, you know, that most of the house can be... checked in that way, and that alleviates a lot of the issues. Where there is a bigger concern is areas that you may end up coming in contact with the food. So, for example, let's say a couch. So you're sitting on the couch. So the cracks in between the couches. You're not going to find. I mean, you may very likely find bigger pieces of chametz. But even the crumbs there. See, there maybe there's a concern that maybe what happens is a person is eating an apple on Pesach, and you put your hand in the crack, and your hand will get dirty, and you'll eat the apple. You eat the crumbs. So anywhere where there's a possibility that you actually may end up coming in contact with the crumb in the context of food, that you should be more concerned about. Let's say the dining room chairs. So if there's crumbs on the chairs and your hands are touching the chairs while you're eating, so again that's a place that you should really there you should be more careful from crumbs. Same thing with with bags, let's say backpacks, bags, and stuff like that. So if, let's say, you have a suitcase or a bag of some sort that you're going to use on Pesach, but you're not really putting food in there or anything like that, so just make sure that there's no real chametz in there. But if you have, let's say, a cooler or some sort of food you're going to take on a trip, and you can actually put food in there, then you really have to make sure that there's no crumbs at all. So you have to make sure you clean that very well. A purse, so there... Also, you could put your hands in and then take food to eat with. So that type of thing, where you're coming in contact with food, that you should make sure that there's no chametz at all. Okay.
Like linen, is it recommended to take everything off the day before, or it just?
You mean to wash it?
Like little kids,
Yeah, so obviously once you've cleaned a room, then you don't want kids to bring chametz into that room, so you have to figure out how to do that. You know, in Chanami, once a place is clean, what? I
think
the point is, once a room is clean, you have to figure out a way to make sure that it stays clean. Right? Yeah. Right. so that's separate. You know, that's true. Okay. So again, so places that come in contact with food. So let's say same thing with pockets and stuff like that. The Shulchan Aruch does talk about checking pockets. So what does it mean to check pockets? So, like we said before from Rav Scheinberg, there's a concern that maybe there's real food in there so that you would be able to see it easily. Now, food in pockets that you would actually put your hands in and maybe would get crumbs on it. So I think if the stuff is laundered before, especially kids' clothes have all sorts of stuff in there, so if it's laundered before, you can assume that anything left in the pockets is already not edible, so that you don't have to be concerned with that. But there you would have that type of concern, that maybe the child, you know, found the snack and he realized there's no chametz in his house for last week, so he stole something from a neighbor and he put it in his pocket. And they have it in their pockets. There, that's where you would have that concern. And if you launder it, then you don't have to worry about crumbs. Now, but other types of pockets, maybe you just make sure there's no real piece, of chametz, something like that. Now, as far as, for example, the kitchen is concerned, so let's say you have a kitchen cabinet, so there really is a concern, because maybe if you didn't clean it properly and there are crumbs on the shelf in the corner or whatever, crumbs from during the year, maybe that will get onto your plates and you end up eating that. So in the kitchen, and let's say in the cabinets, in the drawers, you should be concerned about crumbs, and even in the corners of the drawers and stuff like that. So how would you address that? So there's really three ways to do it. Here's where you could use that toothpick method that we mentioned earlier, and like scrape and clean. But really, there's two other ways that you could do it, which is much easier. First of all, if you spray it with some sort of cleaner that makes any of the chametz not roi la'achilas kelev, so it's not edible, so you could spray the drawer with a cleaner, and that would render all the chametz inedible, and that would be okay. And the second of all, I'm not sure exactly. Right. I don't know which cleaners. What?
Does it have to have like a poison in it?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I didn't look through each cleaner which does that. But there are cleaners that are not toxic, that are theoretically fine. And even if a person would eat it wouldn't.
So those are not okay?
Right, it should be something which makes it not roi la'achila.
Is this for all drawers or just drawers that you're using?
No, I'm talking about now cabinets that you're using. We'll talk about cabinets you're not using soon. So talking about cabinets that you're using, you're putting your silverware there, you're putting your plates there, whatever, obviously food, pantry, whatever. So there, either you should literally scrape out the corners, or you could spray it with some sort of cleaner that will make it not roi la'achila, or you can line it. Let's say you put like some sort of liner, paper or whatever, if you cover it, so then again, there's no concern that something will come in on the other side of the paper. So that may be the easiest way to do it. And some people probably do all three, but
you can use a wet vac, and you can dry vacuum.
Right. You can just make sure that there's no. You could clean it. Right.
Can I ask, like, how much can you, if you have someone helping you, a cleaning lady, how much, because sometimes
how much can you rely on the other person?
Like, how much can you rely? Because, you feel
so
like...
So for this stuff, I'm not sure. I don't know. For this stuff that really needs scrubbing, and, you have to know who you're dealing with. But that could be... Maybe he's not so...
Or maybe she can clean everything, and then you go with the sprayer, and you spray everything. And
right. Okay, you could do that. We did one time. We tested the cleaning lady. So we had the bins of food, the bins of toys. So we put, like kidneys, not chametz cereal in the different bins, and at the end to check if it was still there, and everything was cleaned out, so we knew she was she was given that job. She did a good job. The same thing with the refrigerator. Since you're literally putting food there you do have to scrub and make sure that there's no crumbs in the refrigerator at all. But again, you don't have to necessarily you have the same three methods. You could try to clean it out, you could spray it, you could cover it, and that would, you know, cover you on that.
If you don't see any crumbs with your eyes, can you assume that there's no crumbs? Like, do you have to cover the surface if you don't see
so
any crumbs?
So where you're putting food, there's a difference between the fridge and, let's say, the cabinets. Where the minhag is that where you put food, you really should cover it. There's such a minhag. The minhag is that you cover a table because you're putting food on it. So there is a minhag brought down, and that's like a minhag in Shulchan Aruch brought down, that where you're putting food during the whole year, a shulchan, so shulchanos, you cover it. Why do you cover a table? Because you used it for chametz during the whole year, and your mamash putting food on there, that there's a minhag to cover. So in the fridge, even if you clean it, there's still a minhag that to put some sort of covering on there, some fridge liner or whatever, some sort of liner, freezer paper or fridge liners or whatever it is, that's in the fridge. But in the cabinets, maybe, you know, there, if you really see that there's nothing there, then Chazal said to do bedika. That's called bedika. You check. You know, you don't have to do more than that. But aside from that, in areas that you actually put food, let's say a pantry also, the same thing, where you put food, it's probably better to cover it. There's such a minhag like that. Nothing you have to, but there is such a minhag like that. The big appliances, you don't have to move them out of the way to clean underneath the big appliances and under the fridge and the oven. You don't have to move it out of the way. If it's easy, like the oven has a drawer sometimes that you could take it off and see it get to the floor underneath the oven, that you should do also, because maybe on Pesach you'll end up taking it out. But something which is, you really don't move the whole year, so you don't have to move the freezer to get behind, the fridge, the freezer, the ovens to get behind there.
Even in kids' clothes on Cheerios Day?
Yeah. You know, mechuyev and bedika. Unless within 30 days, meaning from Purim to Pesach, it was already moved. If it was moved within 30 days of Pesach, then you should actually check it before you put it back. So let's say you're having your appliance serviced or something now, between now and Pesach, then before, since it's already close to Pesach, then if it's out already, you should check the area and clean it before you put it back. But stamazay, if it was there the whole year, you don't have mechuyev to check, even though there is maybe likely chametz there, but since it's under mapoilus, you're not mechuyev.
So it's for heavy stuff?
Because very heavy, yeah.
Like, but a bed, you should.
Bed is raised off the ground, off, you know, four legs, or something that you move a lot, like a couch. The mice, people move it. It's not in its place always. You know, you move it when you have a reason to move it, and maybe that reason will come up Pesach. It's not namish so fixed. But an appliance, you don't have to move it. And even if you move it, make sure that you don't dislodge it from the gas line, and because you know, you could run into those problems, which we've had those questions before. The shelves, obviously, anywhere where you're selling to, you're selling, any area that you're selling, you're not checking at all, you're not using. If you're not checking the area, you're not using it on Pesach. So any of such area like that, that you're including in your mechira, you're selling it to the guy, so there it depends on your minhag. If your minhag is you sell chametz gomer, so you would sell full boxes of chametz, so then you don't have to check it at all, because even if there's chametz there, you don't mind, you would sell it. But if your minhag is you don't sell chametz gomer, so you don't really, you only sell in case or whatever, you don't sell chametz gomer, so then the area that you're selling, you don't want there to be chametz gomer there either. So there you should do the same thing. You should just, even if it's in the kitchen, if it's a drawer in the kitchen, you want to make sure there's no real chametz. So you could look and see if there's Cheerios or if there's pretzels in there, and otherwise you don't have to clean it at all though. So anything that you're selling, you know, and the kalim that you're selling, you're not selling the kalim, but anything that you're including in the sale, you don't have to clean or do anything like that. You just want to see, unless if you don't want to sell chametz mamish, just make sure there's no chametz there. And then even the drawers in the kitchen, as long as they're taped off, you have to be sold. By the way, that's important halacha, is that the areas that you're sold, the halacha is, you have to tape them off, and you have to mark them that they're sold. And this comes up a lot of times when people, let's say, are only going to be back one night chol hamoed, or they're just going to be, you know, in and out, and they're not really sleeping in their own house. You know, they're sleeping somewhere else with their parents or whatever, and they want to come back to their house to get something. Since anyone that's going to be in their own house over Pesach has to mark off the areas of the house that they sold to the guy. So if you're going to be there, if you're not there, then you're not there. But if you're there, or you're letting someone else use the house and someone else will be there, then you have to You have to mark off the areas that are sotur gai. That's part of the halach of the mechir. That has to be separate. Just by the way. Okay. Now. Okay. That's as far as.
Excuse me. The oven and the microwave.
How do you kasher it?
24. Yeah.
Okay. So this is first. We're talking about cleaning the house, and then we're going to get to the kashering the appliances and stuff like that. So. Is there any questions on this part about let's see, storage areas, a garage, and these type of things? Again, there's no a storage area that you just use to store things. Since again, there's really no concern that you're eating, you're involved with eating there. So even if there may be concern that there's chametz there, you just have to check the first level bedika. You just have to check for chametz and sweep it, make sure that there's no real chametz. And then that's fine. You don't have to actually clean the area from crumbs and everything.
And what about books? Like children's books?
So books is like this. So the shelf where the book is, you could do the first level bedika. In other words, take out the books and look at the shelf and put it back. You don't have to write down and clean the shelves necessarily because, you know, you see there's no crumbs. There's no real pieces. However, the books themselves, this is a big machlekes. And the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, his minhag is he doesn't use any Sfarim on Pesach. He has a special set of Shas for Pesach, and the rest of the year, and a Rambam, or whatever, and he sells all of the Sfarim. He doesn't use any of the Sfarim from the year on Pesach. But that's not the minhag by everybody. And so the question is, obviously, what are you going to find in a book? You're not going to find a cookie inside a book, right? So what's the concern? That you're going to find crumbs? So, what?
I found Cheerios.
I know.
For sure.
In a box?
In books and Cheerios. And okay.
And cookbooks.
Yeah, cookbooks for sure, right. So if there's a real concern that you'll find real chametz, then you know, that's a different story. Maybe those books you should tuck and put away. And if you're not going to have time to check each page, then you should put it away with the chametz. But books that there's really just a concern of crumbs, let's say Sfarim that are used, you know, or kids' book that they eat over. So there, I think the standard minhag is that if you didn't check each book, because think about it, really the only way to check that would be to take each page and, you know, take your finger in the crease and wipe down each page. So basically, it's really in Eretz Yisrael, you find a lot of times in the, you know, you'll have the kid to take a sefer and shake it open. It's a very nice minhag, but really, If you're concerned that there's crumbs in the spine, you're not going to get it out by doing that. So since it's basically impossible, I think that one way to address it, which is the minhag by a lot of people, is that you don't bring any such books at all to any sort of eating surface, any table. So even if the kids on Shabbos, you read a book to them from a storybook, or you know, any time that they want to bring a book to a table. So on Pesach, they can't bring the books to the table at all. And Sfarim also, you know, like, a lot of people, Tamir Chum, I know that they won't learn on the table on Pesach. They have a shtender and they learn only on the shtender on Pesach. Or they have a separate tablecloth or something for when they learn on the table. So the Sfarim, that's a pshara. In other words, that's a compromise. That you don't have to check each page, but just be careful not to bring it to a place that you're going to eat. So just,
yeah. What about storage, like on top of a closet? So it's not like a separate storage area, but you keep whatever stuff that you don't.
So if there's no concern that there ever chametz got in there, if kids can't get up there and no one actually brings chametz up there, then maybe you could argue it doesn't need to be cleaned at all. And it's not really possible, or you don't have to be concerned that maybe there's chametz there. But if there is a concern that maybe chametz got up there, because one time, you know, you're putting away a suitcase and, you know, you had a sandwich, I don't know, there's a possibility that there was something fell out of the bag. You know, if there's a real concern for chametz, so there, there, you just have to just look. You don't have to really scrub it. You don't have to clean it. You just have to make sure that there's a look for chametz. You know. But one other thing about this is that in houses that are not so big, you know, but it's not such a big concern, but if a person has a lot of areas to do bedikas chametz on the night before Pesach, the real bedika, not just the cleaning, and they're concerned that they're not going to be able to get to all the areas. So sometimes people have this question regarding offices and regarding, you know, their parent, they have to do bedikah for their parents, and they have four guests coming, and they have to do bedikah in five houses, and it's going to be very difficult. So, or even their own house, if they're really going to try to do a thorough bedikah the night of the, it's going to be very hard for them. So there is an eitzah that when you finish cleaning a certain area, if it's in the evening, let's say you finish cleaning a room, so at that time you can take a flashlight and search again with the light over the course of while you're cleaning, and then that's considered that you did bedikah in that room. And then the night before Pesach, you don't have to check it again at all. So that's an eitzah that makes it much easier. The night before Pesach, that's a bedikah, you can actually do the bedikah as you're going along. So before Shamran Lakewood says to do such a thing, that as
even
you're cleaning.
You're still using the room.
No, for chametz?
Well, no, not for chametz.
No. Yeah, if you're using it, but not for chametz. Yeah, obviously. You could use it, just not for chametz. Yeah, unless there's no such thing, you know. Yeah,
that's the question.
Yeah.
We're describing like a high up storage area that's like not a place where chametz goes.
Right.
But still, it's possible that kids threw chametz there. Right. Just somehow, it could happen.
Right, so you have to know the nature of your family.
if
on top of there, there's chametz, you know. Because over the year, they tried to put basketball into that pot or whatever.
Right.
So you know, with the challah roll,
what?
What if people use it on Pesach though?
Doesn't make a difference. You're still owning it.
Bigger piece.
Yeah, I'm not talking about scrubbing, but to check to do bedikah, you have to do. Yeah, if there's a real concern, yeah.
So what if you are going away for the second day? You have a suitcase, and you don't think there's any chametz in it, but you find it when you.
So suitcases should be checked before. Suitcases that you're going to use for sure on Pesach, you should look at them before. What happens if you found it on Pesach? It depends how big it is. You should probably
just put
flush it down
away.
The toilet. If it's big, if more than a kazais, maybe you burn. I don't know. But suitcases that you're going to use on Pesach, let's see, like you're saying, you're going away in Chol Moed or something. So those suitcases, you should. Those are things that you should check. Again, you don't have to. Just open it before, sometime before Pesach, open it and see if there's any chametz in it. It should be fine. You don't have to clean it, you don't have to vacuum it out, you know, but you have to just check that there's no chametz there.
But so, if you're not going to use it, then you don't have to.
If you're not going to use it, then you should probably just put it with where you're selling. If you find it, so then get rid of it.
Not use the suitcase?
No, you can just get rid of it then. It's a shot if you have to burn it, or you can just flush it down the toilet.
What if it's something that comes in contact with food, like you decide on Chol Moed that you're going to go on a long trip, so then you had checked your cooler or whatever, but you weren't planning on using it.
So then you have to make sure there's no crumbs.
So then
you have to do second level.
But it's okay to spray it out.
Right. Because that means you did bedik on it. Now there's a new chash. Maybe you're going to eat chametz, so that you know they clean it again. You know to make sure that you don't come in contact with food. So this is. As far as, is there any other questions about this part, about the cleaning part, before we get to the kashing, the kitchen?
I have a question not about cleaning, but you mentioned about selling real chametz. So if you don't sell real chametz, can you sell, let's say, like soy sauce or teriyaki sauce that usually have wheat in them? I know not all soy sauce does, but...
No, I'm not sure.
Starkey has a list.
I don't know more. Something which is like one of the first three or four ingredients is wheat, then maybe it's considered real chametz. If it's further down the list of the ingredients, then maybe not. And I think most of the time if it has wheat, it's really chametz. If it's just vinegar, which is, vinegar itself is only 1% chametz, and this vinegar is only 1% of the ingredients, you know, so it's like very, very minimal, that's different. But,
what about garbage cans?
What?
Garbage cans.
Okay, so garbage cans, there's no real chash achila. There's nothing, not concerned that you're going to eat anything out of the garbage. But the maisa, the garbage cans are filthy with chametz. And the best eitzah with the garbage can is, since it's the garbage is in your kitchen, the maisa, and, you know, maybe sometimes, whatever, things could happen that maybe you threw something out by accident, you want to take it out or whatever. So it's probably better to just make sure, the best way to do that is just make sure that everything in the garbage can is not really lachila. So pour some sort of bleach or something in there to clean the garbage can. And also, like cracks that you can't get to, let's say between the oven and the counter. So, you know, where the oven, between the oven and the counter, it's very hard to get into those cracks. and clean them and make sure the mamash no crumbs there. So also you could pour something which makes it not right lachila there, some sort of bleach or whatever there, some sort of cleaner, and also that would make that chametz not right lachila there.
But the
anti-garbage is not really such a concern of real chametz, but you know, it's probably easier than to look for the real pieces to just, there's always stuff down there you don't know what it is, and it's probably better just to pour. Probably should say for that.
And also, just I was thinking about like a vacuum. Like sometimes, might forget to throw the vacuum
right.
bag out.
Yeah, right. After you finish vacuuming, of course, right. After you finish vacuuming, you gotta throw out the vacuum bag. Yeah, and make sure that all the comments you collected, the whole thing is not staying in your house.
A rug, can you just vacuum it, or you have to, like, shake it out? And, like,
I think vacuuming is... So, like, linens for your table. Tablecloths also, theoretically, washing it... Shulchanach says washing it is enough. You can wash it.
But you don't need separate.
Theoretically, you don't need separate. If you do that, Shulchanach says washing it is enough. I think people that would use the same one would use, like, a plastic or something, just, you know, in case. But theoretically... The Shulchan Aruch says washing it is sufficient. And obviously things that are going to be very difficult to clean out, like benchers and stuff like that, obviously that's better to just keep away because that you need to use at the table. You just put it away with the chametz. Same with cookbooks because they're going to be in the kitchen the whole time when you're using it. So there's no real way to use it in a way that doesn't come in contact with food. And there's no real way to clean it from crumbs. So that should be put away also with the chametz. Okay.
What about this challenge?
What?
Dish towels.
Dish towels also. Theoretically, you can clean them and use the chametz ones, but the ones that you really wash dishes with, it's probably better not to use.
What about your yard?
Just get new ones. What?
Your backyard, or
camping. No,
it's
fine. What do you mean? In other words, you have to check your yard for crumbs, you're asking?
Yeah, like after we eat on our back porch, let's
say. After you eat, if you're eating in your backyard for a few days before Pesach, after you eat in your backyard, sweep, and you're done. You don't have to check anything more than that. Because the Gemara says that anything in the backyard, you could assume animals came and ate it. And you don't have to be worried about... There's no reason to be concerned about chametz in your yard. The garbage that you know this chametz, animals didn't get to that, it's put away. So you know this chametz, that's the whole question. If what day is Pesach, the Shabbos? Yeah. So garbage comes Thursday over here. So what are you gonna do? So you know. So that's why they have garbage collections, because that's a question. You have real garbage, which is chametz in your property. That could be as a shaila. So that you know, the garbage that you have between Thursday and Friday, you should put in that, and take it out of your property. If it's in your bin, and it's out on the street, not on your yard, it could be, it's okay. What the status of the swale is, I don't know. Is that called yours? Is that yours?
Do you see my cookbooks are like on the wall there? Do I have to take them off, or could I cover the wall? Like just cover them?
You're selling it for chametz, like?
Yeah, because like they're all, let's say they're all regular.
Right, cookies. No, so here's the point. If your minig is that you sell chametz, you have boxes of cookies.
Yes.
So what's the concern that you have a Cheerio there? So what? So you sell it.
But am I not allowed to see the cookbooks?
Like, you should cover. You have to cover it. Yeah.
Do I have to take it out of the room, or can I cover it?
It could be covered with a clear plastic. The point is not seeing it. The point is it has to be clearly labeled that this is chametz. Okay. You could take a clear plastic tablecloth and cover it. I mean, the issue is not that it has to be. It can't be. You can't see it. You can see it, but it has to be clearly marked as chametz.
And also, like things like Gatorade, that's like kidney. Like, do you have to mark that as chametz or selling like?
Even if we don't eat it on Pesach, I don't know, kidneys, something which is not kosher to Pesach, but it's not chametz gomer. You don't want to have it out where you could confuse it and eat it.
Right, but it doesn't have to. I don't know if it's like specifically.
It should be marked with the chametz, I think, because there's still a concern that you may come to eat it, you may end up getting confused, and it should be put away. And we've had stories like that before. People took spices from the other wrong place and they cooked us. It happens.
Right.
So it's better to mark it off.
Quick question. Yeah. With regard to the towels and tablecloths, do you have to wash them in hot when you use them on Pesach? Like there's different settings. It has to be, I mean, I've heard that it has to be hot.
I think it makes sense that it should be hot, but I don't know. I didn't look that up. I'm not sure. Okay, let's just quickly, we can go over some of the halachas of kasher in the kitchen. So, on this kashering, there's a lot of shittas, and a lot of different kashers or agencies have different policies and different shittas. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that someone that has a different shita is wrong. I'm just saying what I am comfortable saying, but there's a lot of other shittas out there, and someone can ask who they, you know, whoever they feel they ask the shalas to. But, and there are a lot of shittas about this. So, but we'll go, you know, one by one. We're not going to talk about individual kalim, you know, frying pan and this, because today people don't really kasher. You know, it's interesting that the primary place the kashering, the halachas of kashering are found in Shulchan Aruch is in Hilchos Pesach. And nowadays, it's all in Hilchos Basar B'Challav. People make a mistake, and they made this treif, and what do I do? How do I kasher it, etc. But in the old, in the Shulchan Aruch, the halachas of kashering are found in Hilchos Pesach, because in those days, people had whatever they had during the year, and they had to kasher everything to use it for Pesach. Nowadays, we don't really do that. Nowadays, everyone has two sets of everything, or four sets of everything, whatever it is. And, you know, people don't kasher so much their pots, their pans. You know, people have separate things. Silverware, some people do. If you kasher silverware, it's different. We're not going to get involved in that. But the main area that the questions come up is the appliances, is the kitchen itself, because it's the same kitchen. So how do we kasher the kitchen? So, like we said, the pantries, the refrigerators, that we discussed already. But the areas which you, where you cook and you put hot chametz during the year, so you need a kasher that. So how do you kasher that? So we'll start with the counters and the sink. So counters that are made out of formica, which is plastic. So we don't kasher anything which is plastic for Pesach. So anything which is plastic for Pesach, we don't kasher. During the year, there's a shayla or Moshe says you could, but for Pesach, we don't kasher plastic, period. So because of that, any appliance that has pieces that are plastic becomes a big question. So for example, dishwasher. So, you know, a lot of the pieces, even if the metal, the inside is stainless steel, but the racks, and even if it's not the racks, but the track that the rack is on, or the bottom, the piece that goes around and squirts out the water, all these are plastic. So it's very big question, you know, very questionable how to, if those are kasherable. So I would not recommend kashering the dishwasher for Pesach because there's too much plastic on it and there's things that we can't kasher. Besides that, even if you were to kasher and had a kasher, it would be a whole question. But the primary thing is that it's not necessarily kasherable. The same thing goes with, oh, we'll get to that. But so counters that are like that can't be kosher. Counters which are stone, which are granite, so here's theoretically those can be kosher. One does have to know if they're sealed and what they're sealed with. So a plain stone granite is one thing that could be kosher theoretically. Once it's sealed with like a, you know, some sort of sealer, which is glass, or liquid glass, or however they seal it, becomes a shayla, because glass we don't kasher, really, or for Pesach. So it becomes a question. The Starkei, other kashers or agencies hold that no, it's butt, it's such a thin layer that it just bottle. It becomes part of the granite, and you could kasher the same way you kasher granite. So that's that, you know, theoretically one could kasher granite. Here's the issue with the kasher and the countertop if it's granite. First of all, you have to make sure it's spotless clean. You know, as you pass your finger on it, you don't feel anything. Because maybe there's food on it. There's food particles. Or there's, even if it's not food particles, it's glue. Whatever it is, it's blocking the kashering process from getting to the granite because there's something blocking it. So first of all, you have to make sure it's really, really clean. So if you have a big, big counter, you have to scrub it all the way a lot of times until it's really perfectly clean. Second of all, how do you kasher it? You kasher it with pouring, you know, the traditional way is pouring boiling hot water on. So you have to have pots. Boil the pot, so you have a kumkum or however you know, the different methods, and you have boiling hot water, and you pour the boiling hot water on the granite. Now, the thing is, you have to make sure that the water that comes in contact with the granite directly from the pot. So now what happens is, you pour a little bit, now the spot you poured on got directly from the pot, but then it goes all over the place. And wherever it's spread, didn't directly get from the pot. So you say, well, just continue going. But now the problem is, it's like we just said before, you have to make sure it's clean so that when you keep pouring, it's clean when it comes in contact. So what happens is that you have to keep on drying the area that you're about to kosher so that there's no cold water blocking the hot water from getting there. Is that... Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah. Huh? I feel like it makes sense, but if you're pouring something from a foot above it, wouldn't it just, like, go through the cold water? Just like the impact?
So, but the cold water was going to cool it off also. So it's not going to be as hot as it was when it came out of the pot.
What so, do you do right away? Like you have a bunch of hot water? Or
yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible to do it. And also, if you have a, if, you know, if you have a, if you're neat about it, you know, you have one area at a time, and you do it fast, and you could do this line, you know. But the point is, you have to get every spot, and it has to be perfectly clean. And you have to assume that the line, that what it's glazed with, is not a problem. Now there has been an etzah. Other people have been, someone just called me today about it, as about, one eighth that was given was a steamer. It was a steamer. So it's very neat and clean and you have each spot. The steamer, I'm not sure what the status is. I personally don't really...
Iron.
Right, that's something else. That was to say that in the same. But the steamer, you're kashing with steam, that's a little questionable. That needs... You have to really understand how that works, because is it kashing with steam or with the hot water? Because steam is hot water vapor, so is it really, when it comes in contact with the granite, is it the hot water? But the steam I'm going to leave out. But there has been another etzah, is that you could use, let's say, you could, you know, have cold water on the counter, have the whole counter be, you know, wet with cold water, and then you plug in an iron, and you put an iron on the counter, right above the water, and it basically boils the water on the spot. And then each spot you go, you're boiling the water on the counter. So you don't have to worry about that the water's cold because you're heating it up on the spot. And this is Rav Scheinberg. Rav Scheinberg had this etzah to tell people you could use an iron on the counter.
So
whether it ruins the countertop, I can't answer.
No,
that's
that.
What you're going to ask.
No. My recommendation is heat the iron up. When it's hot, unplug it from the electricity before you contact the water. Strong recommendation.
I don't know. We take paper towels. Rabbi Janowski said take
right.
paper
so that's,
towels.
That's the other
lay them out,
right.
Puts, he sprays, my husband does it anyway, but before that he takes a razor blade and just scrapes everything off every counter.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There is stuff there.
The,
no
even after,
what,
as much as you
much
scrape,
as you clean,
there's always going to be stuff
you
there.
Still get, he scrapes. But then after, yeah, paper towels. And
right,
then
so the step after, right, so the step after... You know, so the old traditional way was get your whole kitchen sopping wet and ruin your every other year you have to replace your cabinets because it got soaking wet with the boiling water and you know, pour boiling hot water out of it.
That's for sure.
Right. So that was the old traditional way. Then this iron thing came up, but then people got nervous with like things like, you know...
Yeah, but you can unplug it because it has to
stay out. No, but you have to keep on plugging
it
up.
Yes.
So... Right, okay, so I don't know exactly how the iron works.
We keep it plugged in. I don't
know. No, I keep it plugged in. But still, it's burning.
You have to make sure it's hot. Right, so what the other way to do it is that you take some sort of paper towel or towel and you soak it in water. And you put it on the counter, and it's full of water. And then you put the iron on the towel. And then you hear that the towel starts sizzling the water. So it's the same idea, is that the water is sizzling and boiling on the counter, but you have the towel there to soak up the extra water, so it's a little less messy.
And gets hot enough?
What?
It's hot enough to kosher.
It seems like the water inside is boiling, because that's why you hear that sizzling sound. A towel is hard to know because I don't know if it goes through on the side. But you use like Rabbi Selmer, Ms. Summer saying is that you use the wet paper towel, so then, you know, the water is right there. It's not a thick thing. So this is, you know, I know of other Rabbanim that give this Eitzah, and, you know, it seems like the Metzias is that would work. You know, I've never tried it myself, but there's such an Eitzah out there on the granite. And, you know, the other etzah is to cover it. And if you cover the granite, then especially if you use a thick covering, if you just use like a contact paper, like we in the old days, so the contact, so then there's a chashash that there's still concern that maybe it will be a tear. or something like that. So maybe it's still kedai, just in case, kasha the counter, you know.
Just
but
put it in hot water.
What?
Still, even if you're gonna cover it, you still have to.
If you're using a thin covering that could rip,
but a thick one.
If you're using a thick covering, then you don't have to kasha underneath.
What's considered thin?
Something which could, when with okay, a regular use, which
contact paper is pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah, I don't.
Yes,
well, I'm saying with a regular use.
No, I don't think it reads so.
No, it doesn't.
With a regular use.
Even contact paper, there's different levels of thickness with contact paper.
Right. If you use a thick one, so maybe that's. Right.
That's to make sure if you have a question in the counter, not to stop on the counter.
No, I'm saying if you're using contact paper, you could put hot stuff. That's the point, but you have to just make sure that it doesn't rip. Maybe it's a good idea to put two layers. What? But I don't know the mitzvahs on the contact paper. Now the on the counter, another thing to remember is also that. The other thing to remember is also is the backsplash, the back of the counter, is a question, because a lot of times during the year your pot will go all the way to the back, and you know the back also may come in contact with something, so at least it's kedai to have the same whatever you do on the counters to do also on the backsplash, at least for a certain height, that the pots shouldn't, while they're hot, touch the back, which during the year touched, touched the chametz. And also, furthermore, it depends, what the setup is in the kitchen. But if you have if you have the cabinets over the counters, so under the cabinets, this full of, over the year, it gets full of grime and full of chametz. And the steam from a hot pot, you could put underneath there. It could kind of come in contact with some of chametz residue from the year, which is underneath. So there, obviously, I'm not saying it's kosher, but you should clean that area. It's got to clean.
Like the stove when you're boiling.
Right, the stove for sure. Yeah.
We use a brand new. We have for Pesach.
A new fan, whatever. Right.
Filters.
Right.
The filters.
You have to cover as well.
I'm not saying you have to cover that. I'm just saying it's got to clean it. I know there are people that cover it, but as long as it's clean, the main thing is it should be clean.
I got confused about the contact papers. There's the roll that they're selling for Pesach that it's green. I don't know
who can help you.
Is that enough to cover or can
you? What's the green stuff?
Is that contact paper, the roll that they're selling that it's green, and they're selling it in because it's the kosher and in Kastner?
Isn't that they're using it in their home kitchen?
They're selling their things special for Pesach, but now because we were talking about the contact paper, maybe I got confused.
I'm just saying is that whatever you're using, you have to make sure that over the course of the Pesach, there's a lot of pots and cooking and that won't get worn out. So that it could be, let's say you put something hot, it will melt, or maybe it will get worn out or cut. Let's say you cut a vegetable on it. Is it going to cut through? If it's not, then it's fine. But if there's if it may, then you're like, the counter's like that place is not covered. Just make sure it's a strong paper. That's all. I don't know each paper, but.
Or double.
Yeah.
But you could put. I don't know. You can't feel it from the phone.
It does here.
It is regular. Huh? I don't know. Maybe do two layers. If you do two layers, then it's much better. You're more safer. So that's the counter and the backsplash on the top. The sinks, the next thing is the sink. So what?
The backsplash is covered. Don't cash it.
Yes. I mean, at least like to the height of an average pot. Because what happens is the back... Before the stove. We're off the counter still.
Oh, the counter.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the glass stove is not going to be so... Well, okay, I'm going to get to that in a minute. Okay. So let me, I'm going to talk now about, I want to talk about the sinks, the oven, and the stove, and then we can ask questions. I just have Marv at 10 o'clock. So let me just get to those three things, and then we have questions. So the sink is like this. The chashash with the sink, the concern, how does the sink become chametz? I mean, you didn't cook in the sink. So the problem with the sink is not only is it that maybe you put a hot pot of chametz there, but more is that maybe, let's say you were straining pasta, and the pasta, and I'm sure it happened to everybody, and the pasta, you know, touches the sink, and it's boiling hot. So there's real concern there of chametz in the sink. And then, you know, especially now that we said that washing the dishwasher is a problem, so you have to be washing your dishes and in hot water, etc. So the method that I think was always accepted, you know, was to basically do similar to what in the counter, pour boiling hot water on the counter, on the sink, and that basically kashes it. It's not, I can't say that that's wrong, you know, that you can't do that. That's okay, it's acceptable. But you want to know, you know, what I would advise people is that's not really necessarily always the best idea for a lot of reasons. First of all, halachically, it's a question if that's enough. But besides that, is that you have the same issue here, is that we said before, you have to really touch each spot. And here, it's much harder than the counter. The counter's flat. So you could really, you know, like you said, pour a lot. But on the sink, there's... It's at a hard angle to make sure that you really touched each spot, you know, with the boiling hot water. You have to like throw the water and if you pour it from the top, then the bottom is just dripping down. It's not getting the direct heat of the water. So I wasn't sure exactly how to advise people to kasha the sink with this because, you know, it's hard to give good advice on this. So I asked Rav Dovid Feinstein, and Rav Dovid Feinstein said, so I could say it in his name, I don't have to say it in my own name, that you shouldn't tell people to kasha the sink. You should just tell people to cover the sink. In other words, to put an insert. So that's what he said. In other words, there are ways that person can kasha the sink. If you're going to try to do it with the pouring the water over each spot, it's going to be very, it's very complicated because you have to, like we said. The other way to do it, some people have gotten a hold of a blowtorch and, you know, kasha each spot in the sink. I know people have done that also. I also know people that need a new sink air pesa. But there was also there was a mahalak that people came up with that they boil the water in the sink. Essentially, they have like these big immerser, like these industrial immersers, and it's like a coil, and you fill it up and you boil the water in the sink. It's also very dangerous. Yes. It's like you have to be very, very, very careful with that. I don't even know if here people, you know, I think one or two people got a hold of one of those things and were like, you know, we're using it. But also, you have to be careful with that. If you're kashering your sink, by the way, you can't use it for hot chametz within 24 hours of when you're kashering it. You can use it for, you know, for cold, but you can't use it for hot, or for especially hot chametz, for 24 hours. So, you know, if a person can make do with using an insert, a sink insert, like I think they also sell in the stores, a sink insert, then that's much more lechatchila. No shaylas at all, and you use the sink insert. Now, the only thing is, even there,
the water still leaks.
So but it's only just in case. So and also you're much more worried about the bottom, not the sides. So there you could, you know, before you put it in kasha the bottom with water, and the sides you're not so concerned about. It's just that water will come up from the bottom. So, you know, that works.
But if the sink gets a little full, the water's up the sides too.
So, you know,
like
but
if you're washing a lot of dishes, Diane, so if it's very easy for that water to be up the sides, then that can be your answer.
Yeah, but I don't know if by the time it got to the side, it was boiling hot. I don't know what the chashash is exactly. I understand, but the water that's going to the sun's not hot anymore.
That's okay. It's not hot water that touches.
I'm saying, you know, obviously, you know, lechatchila, if you know, the best thing obviously would be do a basic. Not you don't have to be so medactic, but basically, you know, pour boiling water over the sink and then put the insert.
Okay.
you know.
But if the boiling works, then it works. And if it doesn't work, then when you need, like, the intercom.
Yeah, because what's the whole concern we're saying? Let's say you didn't touch every spot. So it's such a suffix. Maybe you didn't touch every spot, but not necessarily, you're not, it's also suffix, maybe it's going to come back in also. So it's like very, it's a lot of possibilities.
It's pretty easy with, I don't use it. My mother used to use them, and I remember it was like crazy because it's very annoying. The water's always like cooling up, and you have to like take it out, which then you have like this
hum. I'm just saying.
And then it could very easily, like, if you're washing a lot of dishes on Yom Tov, which always happens, like, there's water going up the side, and it can very easily get inside. So, like, how does it help not to pressure your sink?
So I'm saying is because by that time, there's so much water, it's not really hot at that point. It's not, like, hot water at that point coming in.
Why not? If you're washing your dishes with hot
it's
water.
It's called Emi Yoshi. You buy it and you throw it out.
But if you're washing a lot of dishes, if you're washing a soup pot, it's very easy for that water to come back in.
Okay, echlami, you know, you have to work your system out. Now, like I said, that's what Rav David said. I'm just saying over for Rav David. I happen, you know, to hear what he's saying about that.
What if, like, you don't have an insert that fits? Like, you know, some sinks are like this, and then they have a little one. What do you do? Just cover that?
You need a sink. If you don't have, you
she means can you like contact paper?
Right. So there is a way. So then.
Or do you just cover it and not use that little sink?
If you can make do without it, you know, you should kosher it and kosher it and see if it's a small sink. Maybe it's easier to kosher it. Yeah, but
like a double layer.
Yeah, but you have to have good tape because the tape is going to get wet, and wet tape usually comes undone. So,
waterproof tape,
and
what about the garbage disposal?
You can't get to it. I was thinking,
you can't get
to it. You're not going to, what do you mean? Can you pour hot water down it?
I don't know. Like, how does it work on
pizza? I think you just pour hot water down it, and it's fine at that point.
And then just like,
but you can't get to eat it, so you can
understand. Right. Right, and nothing that's in there is going to come. The only thing is, by the way, is like what you said, is that the water does come up. So,
what comes up with the drains aren't aligned with the insert.
Aren't what?
Aren't aligned. That's what it is. And if the food's stuck there, that's why it comes up.
Right, so clean it out before, right.
No, I dealt last year with the sink insert that the holes are very big, and a lot of times pieces of food get under the sink, and then it gets very smelly. There, like
so take it out. You don't have to.
If it's not kosher, you gotta take it out.
Yeah. It's better maybe to kosher, like you know, just in case. Pour water on the sink, you know. Right. Like what we sometimes what we'll do is if we have that foil, replace it once or twice over Yom Tov. You know, because it probably requires it's kedai to replace it every once in a while. No, if you can't get a sink insert, someone was asking, can you cover it with something a different material? Just cover the sink. So I'm saying that's also good, but metzias, you have to know how that's gonna if it's gonna be easy to do that. Let me just get to the other parts quickly. There's another thing with the faucet. So the faucet is a big shiloh because the faucet, you know, is boiling hot water and the water is steaming up and the bottom of the faucet during the whole year was getting steamed from chametz and now it's getting the steam. It's gonna so the whole faucet you should pour boiling hot water and kosher the faucet and also the bottom of the faucet should be kosher. So you should like you know when you're pouring the boiling hot water pour it over the bottom of the faucet too somehow. Now the only thing is that it's like you're like yeah exactly. So that's the problem. So it's very hard to do that. You could dip it in. The only thing is that the bottom of the faucet often is, and this was came out last year. We were looking around. Is a lot of the times the bottoms of the faucets have plastic.
Yes.
They're plastic. So again, I'm not saying nobody says you could for this kosher. There were abundance. There are people. But I would recommend is to try to get a replacement piece for the bottom of the faucet. Just the very bottom. Well, it depends what I'm talking about. Not everyone has the same types of things. If you have one that comes out, so, yeah, you know, faucet head, basically.
When you see the bottom, I mean the aerator? Like
yeah. It costs $250. It was very cheap. It's very. If you just have a regular faucet, then it's just the bottom you screw off, and then you get a replacement one. It's like $2. But if you have a more fancy faucet, it's like the... this pull out, whatever, unless it gets more complicated. But the well, it's plastic usually. The problem is that the bottom of it is plastic.
But the mesh faucet covers aren't enough.
So the mesh faucet covers, like the aerator? Yeah. So those sometimes are metal, sometimes plastic. You have to see. If it's metal, you catch. But even if it's, even if it is, there's a lot of times be'en in there. There's pieces. It's hard to really clean it well. It's more kedai. Those cases are very cheap. In Home Depot, you bring your. You ask the person, can I have a replacement one of this? And just get another one. It's $250. It's mamish. It's kedai to just replace it. The complicated one is the one with the spout, because those are expensive. It's a more expensive to replace that. So there, I'm not sure what to. I don't have a very good eitzah for that. What do you kasha with lamaisa? Either a chametz pot that wasn't used in 24 hours. I don't have time to get into that. So basically, a chametz pot that fill it up once, like kasher it, pour out the water, and then fill it out again. The question was asked, it's a good question, is what do you use to kasher all these things? The sink, the counters, the faucets. I use a Pesach pot or a chametz pot. So the emes is that you could do either one, but the best etza is that take a chametz pot. Either two choices. Either take a chametz pot and basically kasher it before. So fill it up with hot water, boil it, pour out the water somewhere else, and then refill it and then use it. So it's like you kind of kashered it before you used it. Or that wasn't used in 24 hours, by the way, the pot. Or take a Pesach pot and then when you're done, then do the same thing. Then kind of re-kasher it. So then fill it up again with boiling hot water so it kind of re-kashers itself. And then, you know, throw out that water also somewhere else. So those are the two ways that you could kasher these things.
Do you have to re-kasher a Pesach
pot? Yeah, I would recommend it. It's a shiloh, but yeah.
Why? Because it's steam.
Yeah, right. It's touched also. You touch the faucet and this. It's just a question, but it's lechatchil. Okay. The ovens.
What about the
arm of the thing? That's what I'm saying. Anything like that, you should pour with boiling hot water. Faucets. The stove, the oven. So the oven, inside the oven, if you have self-clean, then just put on self-clean, and that's pretty much does the trick. The only shaila on that is the door of the oven or the glass. You know, something the glass of the oven. So it's a shaila because, you know, we paskin that glass doesn't get kashered even from self-clean, especially because the self-clean doesn't get as hot on the door as it does in the oven. So for some people hold that you should cover that after you self-clean, just cover the door of the oven as well.
But the inside?
The inside of the door. The inside of the door. That's an extra chumra, not everyone holds like that, but that's you know, anhaga. Rabbi Selmar came up with a chumra last year of replacing the light bulb. Oh. Inside the oven, because the light bulb was a chametz light bulb, so you want to get a Pesach light bulb for the oven. That,
yeah, I didn't know about
that. Yeah, that was every summer.
No, takes apart the whole door of the oven.
Yeah. Anyway, so
the
you don't have to clean inside an oven. No, if you don't have self-clean, we're not going to get involved in that right now. And as far as the stove is concerned, if you have the more common today is the continuous grates. You have one big grate. So those really have to be kashered. Not you can't kasher them really on the stove. So they really need libun. And turning on the stove is not really going to kasher the whole grate because the flame doesn't cover the areas in between. So in the old ovens where you had like four separate grates, so maybe you could kasher each grate separately by turning on the flame for that grate. But when you with these grates, that there's a big area between the flames, and that area gets hot, but it's not going to get koshered by turning it on, even the highest. So really, the only eitzah for that is to stick it inside the self clean when you're self cleaning the oven. The only thing is that I don't know if they'll tell you the company will get ruined if you do that. So
the racks can't stay in the oven when you self clean. Right, so it says remove
officially.
Yeah, but for how many minutes?
Well, it's self-clean. You can't stop self. And you have the what type of grates? Oh, so that's easier. So those you don't have to do this. For those grates, all you have to do is turn it on the highest and put a blech. so that the blech spreads out the heat, and then if you turn on the highest, then that's good.
I used to put them inside 15 minutes. Put it on high.
Yeah, this is better. What I'm telling you is better. Is turn it on highest and put a blech on for like 20 minutes each grate.
And then you still cover them with a little
bit. In this case, you don't necessarily need to because the heat will get to the whole area.
Can you do all of them at the same time as the blech?
Wait, if you have four separate? I don't think it's safe. That's what they say. It gets very. If you turn on the highest with the blech, all four, it's going to get very, very hot.
You're talking about gas.
I don't think it makes a difference for this.
Why the glass though?
The electric is different. Electric.
So you have, if it's electric,
it's what?
With electric, then you just get it red.
Oh, there's no grates on the electric, right? You just put it on. Yeah, I'm talking about gas. Yeah. The other part of the stove, which is the, I'm talking about not glass top stove. The ring on top and all the other parts that you could do this. You can turn it on highest, and maybe use a blech. Turn on each flame highest for 15 minutes, and that spreads out the whole heat, and that kashers the whole entire area of the stove itself. Just the grates you have to put into the oven. Now on the oven you have the same thing we mentioned on the counter, which is the back of the oven. If you have a regular range, so the back of the oven, which is like the screen, the display, also pots touch it and all that. So you have to cover that. The only thing is when you're covering that part, you have to be very careful not to break your oven, because what happens is usually the vents. Yes. For the oven are underneath that display. So if you're going to cover that, you trap the heat and it can melt the whole display. And why we know that is not for the discussion for now, but that's true. You could do that. So you should cover it in a way that you make sure that the air still, it's a toiva, the air can still, the vent still could vent out. As far as glass top stove, I have no etza for you. So you have to try to ask someone else. You could buy a replacement top for sure, but that's like $300 or something. Right, or you get two burners. Right, because I don't have an etza for the glass top. The microwaves. I don't know. I know what some people say. Is that you could kosher it with like a glass,
right?
And but I'm not sure. You have to make sure there's no plastic there, because for the year, you have to get a new one. Yeah, so maybe get a new one of those. You have to order a new tray, maybe. The microwaves, I don't know. I don't know exactly microwaves. Okay. Is there anything else on this?
With the gas stove, where you have like the flame coming out and then there's the grates above it, there's a little...
The round piece. That's what I'm saying. So that round piece, if you took...
And the thing where the actual fire comes out of, all those things that come out when you clean.
You could turn on the highest and put a blech on, and that will kosher that piece.
That's everything you would have put in the
south plate. I think we got ruined. But you don't need to. You could. I don't know if you need to. Or you cover it. You could take that little piece and put foil on. Just if you do put the foil on, it breaks up the fire. You have to be be careful. Yeah, so the area, so it depends. Again, if you have like I don't know the metzias, but if you have like it's a continuous grate, so the area underneath that doesn't really, I don't know if you're ever using that. You know, unless sometimes things fall in.
Spill.
They spill and what? Well, yeah, but you're eating from it? No, but let's say a spoon. Could a spoon fall down there? Let's say a spatula, could a spoon fall in between? If something could fall in between there, then you should cover the whole area. If it's basically off limits somehow, like it's very tight, nothing goes underneath there, then you don't have to.
So when the grates go in the oven, that all is fine, like they're touching each other and everything?
Yeah. Okay.
The reason that you cover, like, in between is because if something may fall, then it's not because it's a problem of cooking.
Right. It's not going to make a problem. It's only going to be a problem if, let's say, what could happen is, let's say something splashes and pops and, bounces, it could splash off and come back to the pot.
So what does that mean if it's continuous grates or not, then?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying something like that could happen. But I don't know. But the main thing, it's a good idea to cover it because also spoons and stuff could fall there. It's a good idea to cover that area. Okay, so...
And what happens if, like, something's covered and, like, sometimes on these baths, like, it's, you you try to cover it as much as you can without breaking the oven. But I find sometimes like foil doesn't stay up all the way, like if you're like,
so first of all, you can replace it. Also, what we used is this like aluminum foil tape. It's like electric tape.
Electric tape.
Not really. Or use the tape to tape on the foil. It stays very good, even in the heat. It's made to stay, like even in hot places.
What about the water filter?
It's just cold, so just clean it.
What about like a water filter that has like a spigot on the sink?
So that's a good question, because you're not using it for hot, but it's plastic. The end piece is usually plastic. The spout. If it's metal, you should kasher.
Like pour the water.
Yeah, you should pour the water. Because if it's metal, because it's on the sink, then you should kasher it.
What about like the bottom of it? Like how do you get the water? Like is it enough like?
That's what I'm saying. It's a little complicated.
If you put like tape and you just cover the bottom of those
things. Yeah, that's for sure better. Yeah.
When you're kashering the sink, let's say like you're pouring the sink. Once you pour that water and then you have to like pour the next part. You have to dry it as you go.
Like I'm just going to say, I just want to see the time. What time is it? 10 o'clock. I have to. What's the last question?
You were saying with the counter how you